Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Blue Jays Happy Hour. This is episode 121. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. If you're listening to this and you are a loyal listener, it has been some time since you've heard our voices. If you're a new listener, welcome. There is some news about the podcast. We are joining forces with Nation Network. Now, for many of you listening, this might not affect you at all. It is going to show up on the same podcatchers as usual. What's new is that there will be some video down the line, so you'll have the pleasure of looking at two maybe more radio-oriented individuals. You'll see our faces, and maybe that form of interaction will bring you joy. I can't guarantee that. That's coming down the pipe. There may be some more advertising during the show than you are used to. Hopefully you have a tolerance for that. The reality is this partnership is going to help safety, stability, security of the show, allow us to do it hopefully for a long time. It's a positive development, and I don't think it's going to be much of a lift on you, the listener, other than having to listen to me do that, 1 minute and 15 second preamble. So let's get right into the show. We've been away for quite some time, in part because we've been working on this deal, also in part because the Blue Jays didn't really do anything during the offseason that necessitated the old emergency pod, or at least that was debated between us at times, but it never came together. Then this deal was coming together, yada yada yada. Stoughton, we are back. We're not going to litigate the entire off season because it seems like we are kind of past that. The season is starting, but to give the listeners a little bit of a sense of our opinions on this off season, let's do a quick off-season review. Stoughton, what was your favorite and least favorite move? And then kind of a mini holistic thought about what went down.
Sure. I'll start least favorite because that's just anyone who's followed me on Twitter will know that it's the Isaiah Kiner-Falefa deal, which I think would be hard for anyone to sort of disagree with. I'm not sure that he's better than, Santiago Espinal or Ernie Clement necessarily. Some of the guys who are getting contracts later in the year, later in the off season, were making his look, pretty team friendly, which, go get that bag, IKF. That's not my problem with it. My problem with it is you have a career 81 weighted runs graded plus, and it looks like there are going to be a lot of at bats out there for you. At least a guy who someone can like come in and steal a job from. Maybe we'll see more Clement than we expected. Maybe Aurelvis comes up around at some point. Did not like that one. Did not understand that one. Still don't understand that one. On the favorite side, at this point, maybe not getting Shohei Ohtani was good, but I don't know how the Blue Jays would handle the fallout of that.
Based on the Bass experience, not great. No, I think Ohtani, they'll find a way for Ohtani to be fine regardless of what happened.
I have all of the confidence in the world that that's true. But no, I think now that we've seen, the whole of spring training and got a sense of it, I think Yariel Rodriguez, I was not as quite as hyped about him as I am now. It looks like he could be a real guy, and he's going to be around for a while, and you know, might lead the Blue Jays into that that next era that may be coming sooner than we hope. I like holistically, you know, I got eyes and ears like anybody else. It was a really disappointing offseason, I think. I think, you know, you look at what the Giants did, and that's a lot of guys the Blue Jays would have targeted, and a lot of fans would have enjoyed to get, and you know, they did not seem to have the financial resources that it was hoped that, you know, they could continue to keep pushing the way that they did last year, and the way that the payroll has continued to go up. And I suspect that's what limited them. And I know there's, you know, confusion about the Ohtani thing, because they were definitely serious about that. But it did seem sort of from the jump that there was the quote unquote unicorn budget. And then there was sort of what the other budget would be. And it's weird to complain about that, because, you know, they are in payroll territory that we never expected them to be, even a couple of years ago, even like maybe a year and a half ago. But, you know, once you get to that level, it's hard to see them pay, you know, pull back a little bit, you know, spend their money, maybe not as wisely as they could have, be kind of conservative, and really bank on those internal improvements, which I commend them a bit on that, because, you know, that's a hard position to take after the frustrating year that they had. And I think that, you know, there's a reason why they believed in all the guys that they had, but you know, it's hard not to be kind of underwhelmed. I mean, that's just obvious, right?
Yeah, I mean, being wildly enthusiastic about this offseason would be an insane position to take. I'm with you. I mean, IKF, again, it seems like an obvious one. We literally had that Robert Murray piece where I think it was an agent identified as the most player-friendly contract given out the entire offseason. He does seem like such a replaceable player. The only thing on his resume that people like to point to is that Gold Glove, which I would remind folks came in a shortened season when defensive metrics are impossible to trust. I'm not saying he's a bad defensive player by any means, but like, that's the one career highlight, and it's a bit of a dicey one.
I mean, he could catch, which I guess they don't want him to do. So
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, the Jays love acquiring players who can catch and then not having them catch. That's a hobby of theirs. But it's, yeah, so that's an obvious one. I also just didn't like the Justin Turner acquisition. I felt like it was truly uninspired. It felt like they were potentially paying for that kind of been there before veteran, get them over the playoff hump thing, which I don't really believe in the context of baseball. I think has more of a place in other sports, to be honest. And I think you'd rather have JD Martinez, for instance, for similar money. I would just be surprised if he's an impact player or even really a guy at his age who can justify his role in maybe the fourth hole or wherever you want to put him. So I would add him to that list. And yeah, I think Yariel Rodriguez is kind of the only interesting player acquisition they made. And it's weird because he's a mystery box, but he also has something of a high floor because you feel with some level of confidence that he'll be a quality reliever if that's what he's asked to be. And if the worst case scenario is the guy is a quality reliever who's a little bit overpaid, and the best case scenario is that he's a decent starter who is on an amazing contract, that seems like a pretty good deal to me. So I don't know, like, yeah, grading out the offseason, like, you know, you're looking in the C minus type of range, and if you want to go lower than that, I can totally understand why you'd say that. It's, you know, they literally filled some holes. I think the IKF thing maybe will become less of an issue because I can see other players stepping up, whether that's Ernie Clement, whether that's Davis Schneider, and then pushing Biggio to third, whether that's Joey Votto coming up and Turner playing more third. Like, there's just a lot of avenues to him not being the starter that everyone dreads he's going to be. But on the flip side, if that's the case, you just paid a lot of money for a utility player and you already had a bunch of those. So not great, not ideal. When we push ahead into the present or the near past, spring training is wrapped up. Which players, and I think both you and I are kind of cautious on the let's take massive learnings from spring training results, but which players changed where you were with them based on what happened with spring at all? Or was it pure static situation for you, Stone?
You know, I mean, I like you say, we are cautious, I think, in general. But man, Ernie Clement had such a great camp, just continues to look like a guy who has that. I mean, I think I quoted in a piece that recently, you wrote last summer, I think, or last fall, about the unsustainable approach that he has, how he's just swinging at absolutely everything, but has this incredible ability to make contact. And they've kind of been working on him how to make more meaningful contact. And, you know, watching you do it in Buffalo or watching you do it against high minors pitching as opposed to major league pitching, it's different, and it's small sample stuff. Still, I feel when you talk about what he did in the majors last year, like that was not a great look, but like a great long look. But I don't know, man. He just keeps doing the things that make you think, okay, maybe something's here, maybe something's here. And I'm not like, oh, Ernie Clement's going to like never strike out and hit way more home runs than you think and have like a high wins above replacement season, an all-star caliber season, nothing like that. But, this was a guy that I basically didn't have a ton of time for, even despite, you know, the nice numbers in Buffalo at the end of last year. And the more I've seen of him, in September, the more I saw of him in camp, the more I think, okay, I understand why Espinal's gone. I understand why there's a chance that he could really, you know, carve out a pretty sizable role on this team if that bat keeps working.
Yeah, he's one of those players who has so many strengths and one profound weakness. So he really only has to give you something from a power/contact quality standpoint to be like really good. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that necessarily is going to happen for him in a profound way. Like there's just some level of physical limitations. Like he's just not going to hit a ball at 120 miles per hour or whatever. But he's also a player who never had more than 4 home runs in any pro season coming into 2023. And then he had 12 last year with 11 at AAA, 1 in the big leagues, comes out and hits the ball with authority against some quality pitchers in the spring while only striking out once. And yeah, I mean, is he going to be a superstar? Probably not, but even the
you even have to have like a little hesitation there.
Yeah,
wild,
it's true.
Right?
It's true. I mean,
he defends. He can run. Like he's best speed on the team in spring. Like it's a really interesting profile. If that bat looks like not what he was before 2023.
Yeah, like even the slightest whiff of gap to gap power, right? Like the guy just doesn't strike out, and the proof of concept is there with 5% strikeout rate at AAA last season, then 7.7 in the majors in a small sample, 2% in the spring this year. It's just kind of unheard of for MLB players. And so if there's anything behind the contact and there is an upwards trend on that, it's a legitimately interesting offensive profile with a quality defensive player. And we need to see a lot more of this to be confident that he's a guy in any way, shape, or form. But he's so much more interesting than the average utility player that costs nothing, who's
or that costs 2 years, $15 million.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you had to trade one for one, like I would rather have Ernie Clement than IKF right now, for sure, at any price. Like if you flipped their salaries, I think I would still rather have Ernie Clement. Now that's an indictment on IKF to an extent.
Oh, but yes. Well, that's what I'm going to be here to do all season long.
it's grim. I was guest hosting on Jay's Talk a couple of the spring training weekends, and I was asked to give sort of bold predictions for the season. One of them I did was saying that IKF would not lead the Blue Jays in third base starts, even though he's kind of the starter. I don't even know if that's bold, but I was just like, there's just so many ways his job will get stolen, and that's the situation I see playing out, to be honest. In terms of the spring training guys, a couple other candidates, Bowden Francis, I think looked like a good version of himself. I don't know. I felt the hype around him personally, maybe a little bit much. Like there's some people being like, oh, he could be mid rotation quality guy. And that was too far for me. Like, yeah. I don't know. He's fine. He's still back the rotation. I do think it's worth giving Mitch White a little bit of shine, though. Like, sure. This is a guy who boosted his velocity in a really profound way, you know, sitting kind of 95, 96 in long outings, too, not just in a single inning. And the thing with White before was always, like, he had a diverse repertoire of pitches. Like, he'd have 5 or 6 pitches at a time, and he was always tweaking them. The slider was pretty good, but basically everything he had was sort of average, and the fastball was like 93, 94 and not Like Francis, for instance, has some ride on the fastball, and it's actually better than the velocity will tell you. White was not like that. He had a fastball that was like 93, 94 with nothing special about it. The guy's absolutely pounded. So if you take that profile with kind of an average array of other pitches, it's not good. But if you take that profile and then you give him like a plus fastball, which is kind of what it looks like he's got right now, not only does a plus fastball plus an average array of other pitches sound like a decent formula for success, I think there's also a chance that it helps all the other pitches play up when guys have to worry about the bigger time fastball. Now, the results in the spring were not particularly impressive, and that's noteworthy, and control was an issue.
Yeah, a lot of walks, I think.
A lot of walks.
11 and 18 innings or something like that. It was a lot.
It was a lot. And so I think he's legitimately adjusting to kind of becoming a new pitcher. Now, is that adjustment going to result in him being a great player? I don't know, but I am interested in Mitch White, and that's not a sentence that felt natural or reasonable to me for, you know, much of the last, you know, kind of since they acquired him. I mean, I don't remember exactly what I would have said at the time, but it never felt like a galvanizing acquisition. It felt like a floor raising depth guy kind of contingency plan type of acquisition. And you know, now there's something there, and it could be nothing. It could be nothing, but it could be something. And that's not, I don't think that's where people were with Mitch White for most of last year, at the very least.
Yeah. And I give credit to the Jays here. You know, I don't want to be too kind on them. Like we just said, the offseason wasn't great, but you know, that's, they do have some foresight into some of the acquisitions that they make and are thinking about. You know, sometimes you end up with a Dalton Varsho season. Sometimes you end up with the last 2 years of Mitch White or the first year of Yusei Kikuchi. But I think, you know, obviously a part of their process is to think about like what they can do to help, you know, unlock the potential and make these guys the best versions of themselves. And I think that's probably something that they identified in White from the get-go. And you know, it's been a bit of a process. And obviously they held on to him, but like they did end up, you know, getting him off the 40-man. At the end of last year, and then he came back and like really shoved in Buffalo, and I think he said like in part it was because he got healthier, because he really sort of started behind with the shoulder thing or whatever it was in last spring, and then I think maybe getting put on or going through waivers, getting off the 40 was maybe a bit of a wake up for him as well a little bit. I don't know, I don't want to like put words in his mouth, but I read something about that. Somebody told me not that long ago that they were speaking to an executive from a different team who was like, yeah, we were trying to like pick him up as a buy low kind of guy because we saw that kind of stuff in him too, and saw what he did at the end of the year and thought that
they didn't try too hard.
No, well,
because they could have had him.
I mean this winter after he's back on the 40. I think the Jays were I think they like Mitch White. I think they like being in the Mitch White business. And you know what? Yeah, if he cleans up that command a little bit, and you know, it's a couple of spring outings, and you know, you can't read too much into that, though it has been an issue in the past. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, there's a lot to like there in terms of like, what the arsenal is when the fastball is 97 instead of 93 or whatever the numbers actually are.
The other two guys who got what I found to be a decent amount of positive buzz were Vladdy and George Springer, who of course, and I think actually you could rope Alejandro Kirk into that as well, because he showed a little bit of power, which is, you know, in a similar way to Ernie Clement, just so important for his profile because the other components of offensive success are there. I am a little bit more reluctant with these guys, particularly Vladdy and Springer, just because I don't think there's any doubt about what they can do over a short, like, I don't think anyone is being like, oh, Vladdy doesn't have the capacity to be awesome over a 1 month span. Like, that's just not a question worth that. Now, he had some impressive swings. He had the 438 foot home run. That would have been his second biggest home run last year. I do like to see from Vladdy him being able to really turn on the ball. Like, he put the ball to center field a little bit too much last year. A lot of fly balls went out to die. And so it's a good indication his bat speed's there when he's striking the ball out in front of the plate and yanking it. you do want to see that. He had a couple of missiles the other way as well. That's another good indication for a swing. Kind of just stay out of the big part of the ballpark with Vladdy, and good things are going to happen if the ball's in the air. And George Springer, you know, last year was about consistency too. He had the max exit velocity that was really strong that indicated the raw power is still there, but it wasn't there consistently. So when I see these guys put together good springs against, you know, whatever questionable competition, it's hard for me to get on board with the ideas like, oh, these guys are back and they're going to be awesome. Now, I think they're going to be better than 2023 for, you know, reasons of regression to the mean and where I see their two talent levels being. But I don't know. It's weird because there's been so much pessimism around the Blue Jays this offseason and even into the spring a little bit. But this was a wellspring of optimism, and I wasn't sure I was totally on board.
Okay. Yeah, fair. I mean, I don't think you can get totally on board a thing like that. But I don't know. I did appreciate the optimism just because of how the offseason went. And, you know, had they struggled through spring, I mean, imagine where the fan base would be right now. Like, I don't think that that's something that people are really talking about a ton. You know, how those guys were good. Because everybody, you know, knows the caveats exist about spring training, you know, the opponent quality and all that stuff. But I think we've been in a pretty dark place, and that this is sort of, you know, in the background of everything is that, you know, if anyone has any optimism about the team right now, partly that's helping to drive it.
Now, I'm not trying to squash optimism in general, no. Although I have, you know, some level of a reputation for that. It's weird, and we're going to, at the end of this show, we're going to talk about, like, what is it fair to expect from the Blue Jays in 2024, and my mind and my gut tell me different things. I have this weird gut feeling the Blue Jays are just going to be better than expectations, and they're going to be legitimately good, and part of that is, I wrote about it, Sportsnet went up today, about, like, how they have really strong depth and bottom of the roster, and that stuff's relatively quiet, and so some of their weaknesses are a bit front and center, and some of their strengths are slightly more subtle. But I think it's probably just sort of the contrarian part of my brain that my first instinct is when everyone thinks one thing, the opposite potentially is true. And that kind of leads into the next thing I want to talk about, which is guys were higher and lower on than consensus heading into the year, because, you know, everyone can look at projections and say, this is okay, this is what the guy's going to be. That doesn't make for particularly exciting content, in my opinion. So I wanted to ask, we'll start with you, and let's start with the optimism. We'll go with the guy who's higher than consensus. Who's someone that you feel better about than you feel, whether it's the projections or the discourse around the Blue Jays, that whichever one you want to focus on, that you just feel better about this player than what's out there?
Sure. I honestly don't know what the projections are. I probably feel, I feel pretty good about Alejandro Kirk. And I know that the discourse, I mean, spring has maybe changed that a little bit, but I do feel that, like, I was impressed that he looked like he was getting back to the guy that we saw before, seeing some of that gap to gap power that you want to see from him, even though a lot of that results in singles. You know, there's flaws there, but he's been really, really good behind the plate. They're going to need him because Danny Jansen can't get his hands out of the way of the goddamn baseball. And you know, I think that really having, you know, like, he just had a kid last year, you know, there's lots of stuff, lots of stories in sports about, you know, how that life-changing experience and, you know, very, very different life can, you know, screw up your routines and just sort of cause a bit more chaos. And then also because of that, not to blame his you know, toddler, but like because he was waiting for the birth of his daughter, he missed a ton of spring last year. I know the World Baseball Classic was going on, so a lot of guys were out of camp, but they were still competing. He didn't get into a spring game until like March 13th last year, which is really late in camp. Kind of felt like he was playing catch up all year long, and you know, lots of stuff just not going right with him. Lots of, you know, like the Vladdy thing, a lot of fly balls that went to die. I feel good. I don't know the consensus among, it depends if you mean the fan discourse or like the discourse of the people who are, you know, paid to follow the team and think about these things. Cause I don't know that anybody, you know, is out there down on Alejandro Kirk that isn't, you know, a crank in the Sportsnet comments section or something like that. But I feel good about where he looks to be at. And I think it'll be much more like we would expect from him this year.
Yeah, I mean, his spring results are interesting because he had so little power over the course of last year. Like, there never really was a moment where he even had a little run. And you can take that back to 2022. Like, he had that middle of the year stretch where he was absolutely pounding the ball. And so you're looking at kind of a year and a half where it's the pure pop gun type of hitter. And that's a little bit concerning for the Blue Jays, because although I think we sort of saw his offensive floor last year, to be honest. Like, a guy who walks 10% of the time, strikes out 10% of the time, his ISO is just over 100. Like, he slugged 358. Like, that's about as much of a singles hitter as you can get, because when he's not hitting home runs, as you point out, he's not a great guy for hitting doubles. And we haven't seen a triple yet, and he could go his whole career without hitting a triple. I think that's absolutely on the table, considering the ballpark the Blue Jays play in. So,
I saw Jose Molina hit a triple. So
it's possible. It's possible, but he's one of the few guys where it could not happen. You know what I mean? Like, it already hasn't happened in, you know, close to 1,200 plate appearances. So he does need to hit a few home runs for him to be that offensively gifted catcher that starts the All-Star game. I think there is a bit of a break in the discourse and the projections with him, because a lot of Blue Jays fans might not be super high. Like, they like him, but maybe aren't that high on what he's going to do. Like, think he'll be fine, but maybe not spectacular, which is, again, fair, because that's sort of what he's been for a year and a half. But the projections all do really like him. Like, if you go to Fangraphs, it's all kind of like in the 106 is the lowest for WRC+, and you get up to 121. Like, there's a lot of hope there that he's going to be a well above average hitter again, which, I mean, I don't think I would go as high as 121, to be honest, but they do need him to be maybe not that level, but sort of well above average offensively to be a relatively key cog in this offense. With Danny Jansen, you know, he's out now, and it sucks to say this because Jansen has progressed so much in recent years, and he's a good developmental story for the Blue Jays in general, but he's someone you simply can't trust to stay healthy. And it's odd, after all the talk about Kirk's body shape and whether that would put him in danger to not be healthy, and how his workload had to be treated, he is the guy who you trust more to stay healthy than Danny Jansen, who is the guy who looks more conventionally athletic and all that jazz. And you know, Jansen has been cursed, so I don't want to sort of victim blame. It's a lot of freak incidents, and it's not stuff that you would say, oh, this is Jansen is not in shape or not prepared or anything like that. It just, that's been the case. My guy,
though, I will say, I mean, I think Joe Siddle talked about it on the on the broadcast not long after it was announced that he'd broken a bone in his hands, and was, you know, like, he just the way he starts his swing, it's just his hands end up being a little bit exposed there, and that, I mean, that has had consequences. Though I think you're right that other things have not necessarily been that, and you're right, I don't want to victim blame, but maybe there needs to be some sort of adjustment there.
Yeah, and he's all, Jansen himself has talked about his, like, evaluating how he catches and whether he puts himself in more danger than other catchers. And it is, like you said, both from the hitting perspective and catching, it is possible that he puts himself in more danger than other people, but he probably puts himself in, like, 12% more danger, right, and gets, like, 400% more injuries, and it's like, that's tough. My guy is Davis Schneider. I feel like a lot of people are kind of saying rough spring from him, didn't earn a starting job, didn't finish last season as strong as he started, for sure.
Also, it was 2 weeks.
Yeah. But, like, but he had a little bit of a rough landing to 2023. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit of a recency bias thing, because in part people are saying, you know, he is going to strike out a ton. And to be fair, even the good version of him is going to strike out a fair amount, undoubtedly. And they're saying that he has this weakness for the high fastball. And that's true as well. And he's spoken on that. But I think what people are missing is a couple things. One, because someone has a weakness, it doesn't mean it's an intractable thing. Like, the story of Davis Schneider is about a guy who's been able to adjust and change his approach and become a far better hitter than anyone expected. So why now would it be impossible for him to overcome another obstacle? Seems odd to me. And also, a lot of it can be done by laying off pitches. Like, pitchers are not going to absolutely nail the top of the strike zone with their fastball consistently. And we saw this with Mike Trout a few years back. Like, he really struggled with high fastballs. And his solution to that problem wasn't, my swing is suddenly going to become incredible at dealing with this type of pitch. It was, I'm going to use my strong plate discipline to make sure that I'm self-aware about the type of swings I can make and be effective with. And I'm just not going to chase things at the top of the zone. And Schneider's got a really good eye as well. And I think he could do that. And yes, he's not the person who had that historic start and is the best hitter of all time and is challenging various records at any given moment. But I don't know. I think 50 spring training plate appearances and, like you say, a couple of rough weeks at the end of last season does not make me believe, oh, this is a guy with a fatal weakness and I'm done with him. Like, he still projects as a well above average hitter. He still has really good power and the ability to draw walks. That is the foundation of a pretty damn effective hitter. And I don't know if he's going to claim a starting role, but especially with, you know, IKF there, Kevin Biggio in the infield as well, like, there is an opportunity for an infielder to say, here's a starting spot, I'm going to run with it. And David Schneider could easily be that guy, even if he's coming off a bit of an uneven spring. I don't know. It just seems odd to me how quickly people have soured on him, considering some of the things that he brings to the table. And I know he's always seemed like a bit of an improbable guy, and so people don't give him the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but it just seems like we've been on a very quick trajectory in terms of perception around David Schneider.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think people, you know, because of his improbability as a guy, maybe overlooked like the fact that he earned that call up that he got last year, right? Like, he did very, very well in Buffalo. Like, how many? I don't know how many home runs he hit.
21 home runs in 87 games in Buffalo last year.
In Buffalo, and then he added like a bunch more in Toronto. Like, he was pushing 30 home runs last year. Like, that's this offense could use that. Justin Turner's probably not giving you that. I think that's a fair point, and I definitely saw some talk like, oh well, he's gonna get optioned down, and this is how I think the roster's gonna take it. I'm like, I don't know, man. I think Schneider really showed enough last year, and that spring doesn't matter nearly as much as a lot of times people think. So I'm with you on that. I think that he will be a big part of the team this year, unless, you know, unless it goes south. And that's sort of the position that he's in that's more interesting to me, is like, you know, Addison Barger didn't have a great year last year, but he was dealing with an elbow thing, and I think some of the underlying stuff looks a lot better than the the baseline stats. And Aurelvis Martinez, I think he had a really good spring again, as usual, which, you know, maybe doesn't tell us much, but I think, you know, he looks like he could come in and be a guy who can mash lefties quite well right now, and it's, you know, the same side of pitching that he's going to have to still work on a bit in the minors. But, you know, if something clicks there, which it still could, he's still really young, you know, there's a guy who could come in and start taking guys' jobs fairly soon as well. And I think he looked sort of like maybe that timeline is speeding up or getting to the point where that could be a real possibility. So Schneider's not like a lock to be, you know, the guy forever for sure. But yeah, I think that the idea that he's, you know, in peril of being sent down anytime real soon, I don't agree with. I think it would have to go pretty south pretty quickly, you know, once the games start to count for that to be the case.
Yeah. And again, looking at his route to potentially taking a bigger role, like, your impediments are IKF, Kevin Biggio. I mean, people don't necessarily want to admit this, but, you know, Kevin Kiermaier, there's a possibility that he, I mean, there's always a possibility he gets hurt, to be honest, at his age, or that his bat becomes less playable and you figure that Dalton Varsho in center becomes a better option. Like, that's, you know, Kevin Kiermaier could become a fourth outfielder for this team in a world where his bat falls off. Now, he's been interesting in the spring because he's been more of a power focus and less of a contact focus for him, which, to be honest, I'm not sure if he's kind of got the goods for that. Like, I'm interested to see it. Like, it was fun to watch in the spring, but he also struck out a ton, right? It wasn't like he did, it's like, oh, I've discovered a new level of power I never had before, and there were no consequences. It was like, no, I swung really hard, and I hit a few more bombs than you'd expect, and I also missed a lot of pitches, which, you know, he already is a guy who strikes out a decent amount. Like, he'll be interesting to watch from that perspective. We didn't kind of touch on him in terms of the best and worst acquisitions because I feel like he fell right down the middle. But it was, I think he was an example of a relatively unimaginative offseason by the Blue Jays. Like, let's just bring back the guy who was good before. And also at the time, you kind of referenced that other teams weren't particularly interested. So it seems like the Blue Jays bid against themselves with him. And IKF, they were cornering the market on no bat glove first players, which it's a move. You know, coming off a year where you didn't score any runs, not any runs,
yeah,
but enough.
I mean, you know, but you do say, you know, you talk about the avenues that they have and the, you know, versatility is a buzzword, but you know, they do have a ton of guys who can move all around the diamond and I mean, perhaps there is some more sense than people give credit for to the idea of, you know, here's our optimal defensive lineup. All right, when somebody's bat just makes them unplayable, now we're gonna like lose a little defense to experiment more with, you know, maybe David Schneider's in left and Varsho's in center, or maybe Justin Turner sees more time at third than we expected, or you know, there are ways to move pieces around to get that balance right. I don't have a ton of confidence that some of the glove first guys are going to, you know, carry their weight, but yeah, there are paths and there are ways to, you know, if somebody's hitting and you know, if Justin Turner is hitting and can't play third and IKF is just killing you every night, you know, there's ways to make that happen. So maybe there's some method to the madness. You know, maybe. Get excited for the season, folks, you know.
When the Rays do it, it's cool. When they mix and match all their players and they're super versatile. But when the Jays do it, it's lame. I see how it is.
They have kind of tried to become the Rays, but with the fifth highest payroll in baseball. I don't know if this is the way.
I mean, that sounds like a good formula. I would have done that. It sounds like a good formula, but I don't think... I think there have been some missing links in that evolution, in that little chain yes. there.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Yes.
In terms of our conceit on higher and lower than consensus players, for lower, I'm going to go with Justin Turner. I did a piece early in the offseason about guys his age, and the reality is, like, outside of sort of true blue Hall of Famers, they almost never produce at a decent level. And I know that he has recently been quite good. Like, he was a 114 WRC plus last season with the Red Sox. But you know, I think his OPS has dropped on average about 25 points per year since 2018. Like, he is in this clear decline. He is at a scary age. And if he, I don't know, I don't think it's far-fetched that he's going to decline more than usual at this point. Like, he's at, a cliff area. He, from a Statcast perspective, he's not a super impressive guy. Like, he's more of a plate discipline guy than a raw power person. And the, you know, to what degree he plays third base could be determined by how other players perform. I could see him kind of pressed into action there. It, like, the whole thing just struck me as uninspired. And when I look at Turner, I still see him potentially as being an above average hitter, but an above average hitter barely, and with very little defensive value, because he's either not playing any defense or he's playing defense presumably relatively poorly at a quasi important position. I don't know. I'm not saying the world absolutely loved Justin Turner as an acquisition for the Blue Jays, but I'm pretty not on board with it from the start.
That I think is fair. Though I will say, I think he tried to play through a foot injury in September. If you look at his month by month splits, like, it was 161 weighted runs created plus in July, 139 in August, and then 56. In September, 122 in the first half. Like, I think that maybe colors his season a little bit, but in general, very hard to disagree with what you're saying.
It's like, yeah. I just don't know if old guy wears down is going to be a narrative that's reversed.
You know? I think he tried to play through something for some reason, and you can kind of see. I forget who tweeted it the other day, but if you look at his, on his Savant page, if you look at the rolling. Weighted on base or whatever it is, it really does go off a cliff, starting in early September, and that I think that just colored the numbers, I think, and I think he could have shut it down and for some reason did not. That's what I have come to understand, or at least try to convince myself.
Fair enough. Who's your guy that you feel a bit lower on than others?
I hate to be this guy, but I do think we need to talk about him a little bit. But my guy I'm lower on is Joey Votto. And I know that most people who, look nowhere to find a fan drafts page or stuff like that probably aren't super high on him either. But, the Jays, it's a feel good story. It came at a time when the Jays needed a win, and, all of baseball was clamoring for someone to get Votto back in the game. And man, I would love to see it if he has something left, but if Dan Vogelbach is a more ideal player for that role of, bench lefty DH guy, pinch hit, whatever. Votto just hasn't been that guy for a while now. He hasn't been the Votto everybody thinks. And a lot of people are like, oh, he's coming for Vogelbach's job. And I would, as a fan, I would love to see it, especially, if the season goes up in flames early, please give me some Votto. But I think, the people who have skin in the game and are paid to, do their best to put the roster together, I'm sure they see very clearly that he is going to have a tough time cracking this lineup, I think, barring some injuries. And even, he's got to outperform Spencer Horwitz in Buffalo. And he just, God love him, he hasn't been that guy, and he's way behind right now. And so I think the idea people have that once he's healthy, he's coming up and it's going to be this thing, sadly, probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, I love the Votto acquisition as long as the team is comfortable with a scenario where it's like Vladdy Guerrero Sr., where he never comes up. Like, as long as they envision that as a viable outcome here, then, there's no harm in bringing him in, see what he does. He was a really good hitter as recently as 2021. That's not that recently.
I don't think it's a couple years before that were that great either. That was maybe
it's basically one good year in the last five, like really, like properly good year. And he's done the old man thing where he sacrifices contact for power. Like, basically guys have to make a compromise at some point when they get to a certain age. And so a lot of guys do the Miguel Cabrera thing where it's like, I'm going to keep my average up respectably and get on base, but I'm going to lose the power that I had. Or you can do the other way. And this is Alex Rodriguez did this, where it's just like, I'm going to be just a power monster. I'm going to strike out a ton. And it seems like Votto's doing the second thing, which is more fun and more exciting and arguably more what the Blue Jays need. But like you say, everything he does, Vogelbach should in theory do. If there's some kind of tie, yeah, it'd be fun to see Votto here. But, you know, the spring training one pitch home run thing was also, you know, it just fed that fire for a little bit. And if he does well at Buffalo, and, you know, last year we saw the numbers in AAA offensively really exploded. So I could see a world where he's putting up sort of superficially good numbers in Buffalo and everyone's calling for him, like Josh Tolley back in the day. and then he comes to the majors and maybe you don't get that same type of output. But you're a miserable, horrible man for suggesting that Joey Votto is not going to be an absolute stud with the Toronto Blue Jays. Before we get out of here, quick summary of what we think it's fair to expect from the Blue Jays in 2024 as the season is getting started on Thursday. Fangraph says 85 wins. Pakoda says 88 wins. There are other projection systems out there. I really don't like Baseball Reference's projection system, so I normally ignore it. I don't know what it said. This sounds like a reasonable range, no?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm with you when you said earlier, you know, I just have this weird feeling that it's going to be better, because that's just sort of a weird baseball thing. And also, man, the Jays deserve to have one of those, like, horseshoe up their ass kind of years. You know, like the Orioles were worse by, like, every metric except, like runners in scoring position hitting last year and 100 games. And you know, that sort of thing just never happens to the Jays. And I don't want to be, you know, I'm not a Leafs fan. I don't want to have that, like, that all intertwined. Oh, Toronto Sports for one, the Raptors won the title in 2019. But it is odd because there are years when, you know, Boston does their thing where it's like, this team shouldn't be this good. And you know, the Yankees have had that too. And it just feels like, and maybe this is just because of fandom, but it feels like that they're due and also are, I think, better than a lot of people think. 85 to 88 wins, that means that you don't have to break your projection by very much to be a really good team or a really disappointing team. I think it could easily go either way, but I do think that that's a fair range, the 85 to 88 sort of thing. And I think, you know, yeah, they're going to be where they were last year. I don't like the it's weird to think of the Rangers as not as, you know, sort of in the middle of the pack, considering they won the World Series and they have a ridiculous lineup and they got some pitching coming eventually. The Mariners rotation is really good. And, you know, if they just hit a little bit, they're kind of, you know, a Jays-ish thing. Those teams get to beat up on Oakland a lot. And it's going to be, you know, where those projections say, which is like fighting for probably the last wild card spot. Could go very differently, could go way better, could be tough. But I don't know. That seems to be the reasonable spot.
Yeah, I mean, Fangraphs right now gives them a 49.0% chance of making the playoffs. Like, it is a pure coin flip. There is too much doom and gloom in the discourse around this team. There's too much fatalism in the fan base, and that's understandable because a lot of times what people do when they think about projecting a team is they look at, like, what did this team do last year plus what was their offseason? And that's not really a fair way to think about it, especially in baseball where player performance just honestly varies so much from year to year, and pitching health varies so much from year to year, and the Jays will probably get better position player performance and worse pitching health, and it's hard to know where that's all going to net them out. But I could see a world where I think it's fairly likely that they're going to approach the trade deadline in the mix, and they're going to have to make a determination about whether they want to push in, whether they think it's a bit of a moment to retreat. Maybe if they're behind too many other teams, they have to catch. There is this darkest timeline where they really struggle and they approach the deadline, and 2024 is the year where they bust things up because they don't think they're re-signing, whether it's Bo or Vladdy or both. And they have a ton of players that are coming off the books in the next couple of years. If the Blue Jays really wanted to say this is the time to reset it, it would make a lot of sense, again, in a world where they really struggle this year, which I think is probably less likely than a lot of people are putting out there. But in terms of, I don't know, interesting maybe is too positive a word, but in terms of possible outcomes for the Blue Jays in 2024, that is the most radical departure from what we've seen in recent years, and it might be the most impactful one for the franchise that could come to be. And I do think that that is definitely in the cards, which to some extent is unfortunate, but to another extent, I think if you're thinking as the Blue Jays about what's your long-term future, and competing forever and all those things that they like to say, that is absolutely on the table. Although it's maybe it's not worth kind of doom and glooming out that scenario before they even fail.
Yeah, I think that's true. But yeah, like you're still in a phase where, I mean, Kevin Gausman would have a lot. You can domino it out, right? There's a lot of talent that's not going to be around for the next era of great Blue Jays baseball. If the you know, darkest timeline starts looking like it's coming to fruition, you could do a lot to power a reset if you start moving like viable big leaguers, you know, all stars, George Springer, Kevin Gausman, Kevin Kiermaier, and maybe not Dalton Varsho. I don't know. You're right. We don't need to game all that out, but you know, it's. The team would never say it, but, you know, I think it was even telling him, Mark Shapiro talking to the media last week. I don't know if it was a sit down with Arden or if it was through the quotes that he did with the reporters down there, but he was just talking about, you know, we don't think of it as, you know, you have to win the offseason. We just think about it in terms of junctures and kind of left it in my mind. I'd have to read or listen again, but it kind of left it open for, and then well, the next juncture will be next winter, and I'm immediately like, yeah, and then you could theoretically pivot at that point. I don't think that's off the table. I don't know how ownership would feel about that with all the luxury boxes and the seats they want to be selling for way more than before. I know, but a lot of those seats are getting locked in early anyway, so. Maybe they're going to take the money and run. It wouldn't surprise me to have Rogers do a thing like that either. So, that's we'll have all year to talk about that. I think it's good to get that out of the way right now, though it'll be inevitable if they struggle out of the gate. But they have such a tough schedule to start the season that I am worried about the doom and gloom creeping in. I mean, the doom and gloom is always, you know, hanging over the necks of this team, or at least has been the last few years. Ever since they missed the playoffs on the last day of the season, I wonder why, and then kept spiraling out of control in the playoffs and just embarrassing themselves. We're gonna look back and laugh one day about this era, one hopes. But yeah, man, it could get ugly. I hope it doesn't. It's tough without Romano and Swanson to start the year, which looks like is probably likely. But what is it's like? Four at the Trop, then you go to Houston, then you go to the Bronx, then you host Seattle. Like, they could come out of that with not in first place in the American League East.
I think
fairly easily, yeah.
If they're first place in the American League East after that, then it'll be a pretty good sign that the season could go in a strong direction. I think, really especially unfortunate for this franchise, the way that scheduling plays out, because after the offseason and how much faith a lot of the fan base lost in the franchise and the direction, to have their ability to get off to a start that makes people forget that, totally kneecapped. Now, it could, in theory, still happen. Stranger things have happened than a team that figures to be in the playoff mix having a strong run against good competition, but this team could really use a fantastic start, and their ability to put one together is just... it's not in a good spot. It's not in a good spot. So I guess to listeners, I would say, if you're not feeling good about the Jays and then they get off to a 5-8 start or something, and you feel like all of your worst beliefs about the team have been validated, I wouldn't lean into that feeling, because you always want to wait and see with a team, to be honest. And part of what we do in April, trying to parse what means stuff and what is not going to be significant over the long term, is it's a tough thing. Like, I find, to be honest, making baseball content in April is the hardest time to do it. And so I think asking for patience from this fan base is a tough ask based on a lot of what they've seen, but the Blue Jays might warrant some patience early here.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. But also, man, it would be so nice to not be chasing and not, you know, be in a place where, you know, a loss here or there doesn't feel like, oh, and now we're looking at the standings and, oh, it's all demoralizing. You know, it would be nice to have a little cushion at some point and feel comfortable. And that's happened in 21 and 22 a little bit. Maybe not, but it definitely did not ever happen last year. And it always felt like, you know, this next loss means, yeah, this is it. They're not making the playoffs. They're terrible. And might have been terrible, but they did make the playoffs and should have been a lot better. The story of the 2021 to 2024 Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, my hope is it's a different story. And it's like whichever direction that takes, it just last year was absolutely a grind for following this team. And even a different kind of grind would be appreciated. But that is not within our control. We simply comment on what happens. We're going to leave it there with you guys. One, I'd say, aspect that is going to be good for listeners in terms of our new partnership with Nation Network is we're probably going to get on a little bit more of a regimented recording pattern. So you'll hopefully know when we're going to come out with new episodes. At the moment, I know we're coming to you on Wednesday right now, or this is when we're recording. I don't know when you'll listen. Our plan is to record on Tuesdays and have the podcast come out on Tuesday afternoon. I can't promise that won't change, but we are aiming for a little bit more organization and consistency here, and hopefully that's something we can deliver throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to the season. I mean, despite all the downward spiral of optimism that the end of this podcast took, yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great to see the renovations in the Dome. It's going to be nice to see the Rays that, look like they shouldn't be good this time and still, buzzsaw through the chase at the opening weekend. It's nice that they don't have to have an off day after opening day. I always hate that little letdown. Four straight, sure, bring it on. Bring it on, and then the stupid Astros and then the stupid Yankees. What a night.
But in theory, we all like baseball. So theoretically, this is something we should be enjoying. We'll see if that ends up being the case when we talk to you again next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.